Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
G'day. Welcome to the National Security Podcast. I'm Chris Farnham, and this is the podcast that looks at the national security challenges facing Australia and the Indo-Pacific. This podcast is a collaboration between the National Security College at the ANU and policyforum.net. And welcome to the Women in National Security special series. We are running a series of podcasts all throughout the week in conjunction with the National Security College's Women in National Security Conference. And given that that conference is sold out, this is the best way for you to get involved if you're not lucky enough to have a ticket. That conference is running at the Hyatt Hotel in Canberra on the 24th and 25th of October, and we are bringing to you not only some podcasts with some of the speakers and chairs involved in that conference, but we're also going to be at the conference speaking to some of the other presenters and some of the audience as well, getting some of their insights and thoughts on what they're hearing and what they're experiencing at the conference. This podcast is essentially an introduction to that series. I'm going to be inviting my wonderful colleague, Gabrielle Kniep, to come in and take over the hosting for this podcast series. So you won't have to listen to my boring drone anymore. You will have the lovely tones of the wonderful Gabby speaking to you very soon. So as an introduction to that podcast series, I will be having a discussion today with two wonderful women from the cybersecurity community. Now, before we get into that, I just want to say thank you to everybody who has given their feedback to us from the Jim Clapper podcast that we ran last week. Obviously a pretty big podcast for us, and it was a really good discussion that we had, I feel, and it seems that a lot of other people feel, judging on their response that they've given us online. Now, if you want to give us some of your thoughts, whether that's on the Clapper podcast or this podcast series that we've got about women in national security, you can do that by way of Twitter, hitting us up at APS Policy Forum, or on Facebook using Asia Pacific Policy Society, or you can send us an email using podcast@policyforum.net. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and we'd love to hear some feedback, and of course, we'd love to see you subscribe and give us a rating while you're there. So today we are going to be speaking to two women from the Australian cybersecurity community. We're going to be speaking to Amy Roberts. She is an assistant director with the Australian Signals Directorate, where she's responsible for a number of initiatives to promote an array of cybersecurity career opportunities, and she also strives to increase the participation of women in the industry. She also runs a series of National Women in Cyber Mentoring events, which match university and TAFE students with female mentors from across the country. Amy is also the national coordinator for the Australian Cybersecurity Challenge. And we're going to be discussing this more on the podcast, so I won't go into it too deeply, but it's this amazing initiative that's run by the Australian Government and the Australian Cybersecurity Centre in conjunction with Telstra, PwC, Cisco, Microsoft, BAE Systems, Commonwealth Bank, Splunk, Australian Information Security Association, and Hack Labs. And you're going to hear more about that in the podcast. Amy's role with the Australian Signals Directorate, or ASD as you'll hear it called, really sets herself up for part of her participation in the Women in National Security Conference, because she's actually going to be chairing a panel called The Future of National Security, A Student Perspective. The reason why this was so important to Amy, and you'll hear her touch on this in the podcast as well, is that there seems to be a habit in policymaking circles and national security circles where we really talk deeply and broadly with a lot of people in the actual community, which means a lot of adults. And a lot of the time that means middle-aged white men adults as well. And because cyber is an issue unlike, say, military or diplomacy, in that cybersecurity is relevant to every person who has a computer and gets online. So not only is educating the youth important, but also understanding how they like to be spoken to, what's important to them, when is a good time to discuss certain things during their development. So if we just devise these strategies without involving the youth perspective, we're unlikely to hit every mark and we're likely to miss so many important points. So Amy is going to be chairing that part of the conference for us, which will be great. And the other woman that we are talking to is my wonderful colleague, Miss Catherine Bridges. She is a cyber advisor at the National Security College, where she's on secondment to us from the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, where she works as a cyber advisor. She has worked on several complex legal reform projects, including parliamentary inquiries into legislation governing the national security community and amendments to the national security legislation. Catherine recently worked in the Office of the Cybersecurity Advisor, predominantly focusing on the international dimension of Australia's cybersecurity policy. Catherine is also one of the speakers in a plenary session at the conference on technology and security, and we really look forward to what she's going to say there. So why don't we cross over to Amy and Catherine right now and hear what they've got to say. G'day, Amy. G'day, Catherine. Welcome to the National Security Podcast and welcome to the very first in our special Women in National Security series of podcasts that we are running in conjunction with the National Security College's Women in National Security Conference. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Excellent. Well, let's start off. Let's really put the context in the national security space. Catherine, if you could give me the cyber picture of the current landscape now, what are the current threats and what are the challenges that you see coming down the line?
Cyber is everywhere. We hear it on our news, we see it in our newspapers, and that's a fundamental change from where it was just a few years ago, where it was a niche issue. If, in fact, anybody knew about it at all, most of the time we heard about IT, and people, in fact, who were in cyber roles would actually say, I'm in an IT job, because if you actually turned around to somebody and said, I work in cyber, people would go off somewhere else. They wouldn't know what you meant. What was that about?
Is this like when Lawnmower Man and that movie in that period?
that's exactly right. It was all a bit futuristic. It was a bit out there. It was a bit untouchable. It was something that happened to other people. It didn't happen to everyday normal mums and dads at home. But now it does. And that's been a fundamental change over a very short period of time. We've seen, particularly since 2017, there've been an increase in ransomware attacks, so people actually having their information held privy by other people for payment of money. And we've had some really big attacks that happened in 2017. This year, we've actually had quite a few data breach problems. You might have heard of Cambridge Analytica, which was a situation that happened earlier this year where lots of people's personal information was actually put out there and made available. We're seeing more and more and more of that sort of activity happening. And we're seeing some of our companies, our big social media companies, becoming vulnerable to this sort of thing where their third-party providers have actually allowed material to become available out in the public space. So it's an issue that has more relevance to everyday normal people. And because it's more visible and something that people are more aware of, people are asking, well, what can be done about this? What solutions are there? Who are the vulnerable ones? What do we need to do to look after ourselves? And that's been a fundamental change because when an issue starts becoming more topical and more relevant and within the everyday space, it's great because it raises visibility and people do start asking those questions, what can I do to protect myself? But they also start looking for why is this happening in the first place? What's government doing to protect me? So some of the critical issues out there are about protecting privacy and people's personal information, the role of social media companies and how and who they're making information available to, the still vulnerabilities of people coming into your computer system in your home to access your information, cyber criminals, as we call them, that's very real, compounded too by things that happen at the global level as well. So nation states as well are increasingly accessing not just company information where they can, but they are using cyber as a way to get inside our companies, our government agencies, our universities. So because there's rising visibility and the threat landscape is getting bigger and down to the individual level, one of the challenges we've got, and a big one, is actually getting the people on board into our industries who have the skills that we need to be able to create the products that we need and the information, the awareness and the services that we need to address this issue.
And we have a projected national shortage of 11,000 people to 2026.
And Amy, I believe this is the space that you're working in.
It is indeed. In fact, I work at the Australian Cybersecurity Centre in a team that is focused on encouraging people to consider careers in cybersecurity. So we need to raise the profile of what that actually means. So as you said, Catherine, what is cyber? Who actually knows what cyber is? And so cyber is IT based skills as well as a whole bunch of other business skills. So we need an array of roles to support the cybersecurity industry to actually protect our assets, our greatest assets, which is our personal information and our products that we're building. Part of government's role in doing that is actually running a number of programs, and one of them is the Cybersecurity Challenge Australia, which I manage, and it's a university and TAFE undergrad hacking competition, so ethical hacking. Mm-hmm. And this year, we've literally just had it running last week. It's a 24-hour hacking competition where students log into a virtual environment and try to find threats within a dummy system, a dummy company, if you like, over a 24-hour period. This year we had 427 students across Australia competing from 35 different institutions, and we had 11 TAFEs this year, which is really exciting. It's predominantly been a university challenge, and we've now got the TAFEs involved because we need to recognise that the pipeline of staff is not just going to be, future staff requirements is not just going to be coming from universities. We need a whole array of different skills. We need the diversity of practical application as well as the thought side of the industry. So
all of these teams were based remotely, or did you have them all in one big area? How did that work?
So majority of them were all based remotely. So they're all competing within their own institutions around Australia. But this year, for the first time, we had eight teams based at the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre as a part of the ASA conference. And we had teams from, we had two of our all-girl teams based there. We had a couple of TAFE teams and uni teams. And they actually competed in situ. They were fed and watered for 24 hours and looked after in a really secure environment. And it was fantastic. Got a chance to see, the students got a chance to see what it's like to be in a real live operation. So they're working on a scenario environment and they're throwing a variety of challenges at various different skill levels.
Who designs the scenario?
So the cyber challenge is run in conjunction with by government in conjunction with corporate partners. So the designers of the challenges are the technicians from Telstra, PwC, Splunk, BAE Systems, Microsoft. And I know I've actually forgotten other partners. Did I say Telstra? I will mention the rest.
We'll probably put up some of these names on the page so we can have all that there. And they're the top level companies
Absolutely.
In the world in this space as well.
Absolutely. So many of the designers of the challenge actually are former competitors. So they've come from the universities, the top universities around the country, and they've been picked up by those organisations. They're now designing the very challenges to try and attract the next generation of cybersecurity specialists to the industry. The advantage for our corporate partners to be involved is they've got access to the top students around the country who are in this space and have a chance to make them job offers, which is a fantastic opportunity for both sides, both the students and the organisations. So
Amy, can I just ask, one of the concepts you mentioned there, which was really interesting, was ethical hacking.
Mm.
What's ethical hacking? Is there a risk that by giving people of that particular age, young people, the opportunity to go in and be involved in a 24-hour, hackathon.
Mm.
Are there risks associated with that, and how do you manage that, and is that what ethical hacking is about?
Yeah, so there certainly are risks, and I guess other than having strict terms and conditions, which we assume everybody reads, we do actually state that the reason why we're teaching these skills is so that you know what your adversaries are coming at you with. You can't know what you're actually defending if you don't know what tools are being used. So the challenges that are actually built by these technicians are the threats they're seeing coming through their networks right now. So Telstra, you know, whatever they're seeing coming through their security operations centre, these are the guys that are actually working on the challenges. They're building them based on the real life threats that they're seeing. So this year's scenario is actually based around a shared office environment, which is so topical. There are small businesses who are all part of this shared office environment, and there's a couple of shared services. So there's the multifunction device photocopiers, which we all have. There was the air conditioning system, which we all have. And they're all actually managed by one organisation and then sourced to these small businesses. And that's where some of the intrusions were being detected, was in the shared environment.
So these are all network devices, I assume?
These are all networked devices. And so this is the scenario that's set up. So each of the challenges that the students are faced with in the bigger cybersecurity challenge over the 24 hours are different attacks on various parts of their own organisation, this dummy company that they're a part of. And so they're actually defending, what is out in the wild as real life challenges to the security of the fabric of today's organisations.
It sounds like a great way to actually take your university or your TAFE learning as a student and put it in a practical environment.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Sort of like a day in the life of
a very long day in the life of. And if you're involved in an incident in an organisation, that's exactly what it'd be like. You'd be hammering away at the challenge and reporting to your executives and actually giving feedback about what's going on in that space. So one of the critical things with regard to technicians is the ability to also be able to communicate. And so we know that policy is a major part of, and communication is a major part of our landscape. Without those business and marketing and management and risk and governance skill sets, we can't actually effectively manage the cyber environment. So part of the responses actually are written responses on how a threat was identified and what the remediation response was that was taken at the time. And that all forms a part of how well they're marked. Basically they get points for how well they respond based on whether they could actually effectively communicate what happened, because without those skills in the industry, you'll never we need the communicators and we need the translators that can communicate between the boardroom and the technicians of why we need the funding to build the widget. That's the sort of information that we
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's a great way to look at it, because even when you go out and you sort of go to cyber-related functions, I'm often amazed at how quickly people start falling into IT-related jargon really quickly. There's an assumption that everybody around the table knows all of this jargon and that that's the key focus of, cyber. Instead of going, it's a much broader conversation and you need a whole range of skills to actually address this problem. So you need highly technical skills, absolutely, but you also need the thinking, the creative, the curious skills and abilities, the ability to be able to write, to speak, to communicate, to take problems and identify solutions and see how the landscape's changing and how you need to respond to it really quickly. And I guess that opens up the doors to a broader set of people who have the capacity and the ability and the skills to work in this area than many people, possibly school leavers, parents, people already in the workforce, actually think.
Absolutely. And that's one of the challenges that we've identified. So with the need to grow the workforce rapidly to get the amount of people in that we need to address the challenges that are coming our way, there's predictions of the sorts of things that are heading our way, we actually need to find other ways of getting people into the industry and fostering all of the different skill sets. So one of the critical things of CISCA is not just what students are learning in the classroom, it's actually what their lecturers are encouraging them to think about in terms of why they're studying what they're studying. And we can't actually have the institutions or even parents thinking about what kids are working toward if they don't know what the careers in cyber are as well. So there's a lot of work to do to communicate to schools and particularly younger students, because we know that particularly if we're going to be looking at a diverse community and bringing, it's a very male-dominated environment at the moment, if we're going to be looking at bringing in a greater percentage of young girls into the industry, then we're losing girls to science, tech, engineering and maths between the ages of 5 and 7 because of societal influences. So it's the teachers, the parents, as well as when they get into tertiary studies, that we need to, as an industry, we need to be going out and doing the work and telling them what careers are available for that particular line of study that you're studying. And one of the ways that we try and do that through the Cyber Challenge is each of the, because we do only have 11% participation of women in the cybersecurity industry.
Really? Yep. That low?
That's an international standard, and it's been there for 5 to 10 years. So we're not shifting the dial at all on that. So something needs to change if we actually want to create a diverse community. So at the moment we have groupthink. Wouldn't matter if it was one sex or other or one gender or one race or one creed. Once you've got groupthink, we're not building diverse products and building
you end up
safe platforms.
Group polarisation, where it's a particular perspective that when you put a bunch of people in a room who think about things the same way, have the same perspectives, their views become to polarise and get stronger, and they all agree on the same thing
and
get narrower and stronger. Yeah. And when you're talking about policy or strategy, if you have such a very narrow focus or a narrow perspective and you are so strongly set on that, you're going to miss all the other things that could be going on all the other whys, wheres and what fors.
Yeah.
And if your adversary has a diverse perspective, they're going to run rings around you. And so in the national security space, and this is something that you see society talking a lot about on social media and so on, is there's this discomfort with change and the way we are talking about diversity and changing society. And the pushback is, stop being so PC or stop this virtue signalling and so on. And what a lot of people don't understand is, yes, there is definitely a moral argument and an ethical argument, absolutely. But when we're talking in the policy space and the strategy space and the technological space, this isn't essentially about morals and ethics. This is a capabilities issue.
Absolutely.
We're about outcomes on the ground. We're not about trying to make society happy. We've got a mission, we've got a job, and we have to do that as best as we possibly can, because if we fail to do that, the consequences are extremely high for the nation. So this is about diversity, gender, race, culture, and so on, age. This is all a capabilities issue, not just a moral and ethical issue.
Absolutely.
So it's quite unfortunate and quite shocking to hear that, one, there's only 11% female participation in the cybersecurity space, and two, that that's not actually moving as well.
I think the biggest challenge, well, I have recently been at a conference in Melbourne where I've been listening to various different people talk about this and at a diversity roundtable recently, and there is a theory that because there is this massive untapped resource of women, and there are technicians out there are specialists and bright, smart women who are in this space, cyber is not a welcoming environment at the moment, and we need to actually make it so. And so there is one theory that if we actually increased immediately the balance of gender, we'd actually address the diversity of culture and all of our other, age, creed. So we would actually immediately address a bunch of other stuff as well. It's really simple. Without the diversity of thought, we're never going to build safe products or have solid services. And if we're not a representative of the community that we serve, how can we serve the community?
Absolutely.
We're attempting to actually make solutions for a vast array of people without that experienced voice around the table developing that. So one of the ways that we try and expand the job opportunities or expand the sorts of roles that are available for some of the young women that are studying is of the female challenges that compete in the Cybersecurity Challenge Australia, or CISCA as it's known, hashtag CISCA 2018, is we actually invite all of the women that compete, regardless of where they came in ranking, and we invite them to a two-day workshop where, in conjunction with our partners, we immerse them in cybersecurity careers. So we show them a whole bunch of different options that are available, from risk and governance managers to journalism and events management to technicians. We had a lock-picking exercise. We had a game scenario that's run by PwC called the Game of Threats. That was, you know, a fantastic opportunity for the students to play red team, blue team stuff. And then on the second day, I actually gather amazing women at different stages and ages of their career as mentors, women who want to give back and know that they need to be growing the next generation of specialists. And we have a speed mentoring session. And it's loud and fast and fun. And, you know, in 5-minute cycles, each of the students get to speak to each of the mentors around the room. And then at the end of that, at the end of the day, the students then get to choose the top 5 mentors that they really felt they connected with. And then they match up for the next 12 months and have a mentoring relationship. So that's actually one way of providing a different perspective. Because if, you know, there are women who are sitting in a classroom, they're one of many, many men. Yeah, at that age when you're studying, you want a social life at uni as well. So if you're not seeing your own kind and you're not feeling welcome, not that there's, you know, not that everybody is unwelcoming in the community, it's just how you know, your social needs.
And let's be honest, when you get a group of blokes in a room together, we do get very blokey. There's no denying that.
Yeah, it's like
that.
Getting a group of women together. It's no different.
No,
you know,
that's very true.
Yeah, it is very true. I'm in an all-female team at the moment with one guy, and God knows we need some diversity in our team. But
I couldn't agree more. Boy humour makes everything real.
Yeah, it does.
It just cuts through. Yeah. Having a good laugh, that's just the way to do it. And actually getting down to talking about issues and realising that in this space there's commonality, and with the reason being we're all users. So this is really why you need the diversity of views, because everyone in our community, you know, has one of these mini computers in our pockets now. We never thought we'd have that 10 years ago. It was only 10 years ago that we had the first sort of iPhones coming out. And look at the way that our world has changed. And this is before we get to the things that are projected to be coming down the pipeline towards us. We've started wearing Fitbits. We're all a bit sort of in love with tracking how many steps we're doing. More and more wearable devices will become the norm. You know, artificial intelligence, things that are run on the basis of mathematics, will more and more guide our lives. So we're at the beginning of a really, really exciting time in this point of the world where we're human beings. We've got this amazing intersection with technology that's happening at a really, really compressed, rapid pace. And there is that concern that if we're not capturing all those views, we will leave people behind. Mm. So there are really important discussions to be had. How do we protect people? How do we involve people in this? How do we deal with concerns that people have that more automation is going to leave people out of jobs, and turn that discussion around into how do we actually create benefits? And I think one of the key things that this technology can do if we get it right is create the ability to give a whole stack of people new developed skills that will enable them to go into better paying jobs. And cybersecurity sits at the cusp of that with the work that people like you, Amy, are actually doing. This whole wonderful thing of giving people new skills and exposing them to new jobs. And if we could grow that across a broader section of the community, I think we'll achieve a couple of things, which is getting the people in to fill the skills gaps that we need, but also taking a lot of people who are concerned, seeing their particular industry as being automated, and skill them into jobs that actually help them steer into the right and bring them along with the future that's there.
And I think it comes back to what we were talking about earlier about describing the type of job opportunities that are actually available. We don't do that. So I just realised that, you know, Defence actually have a campaign where they have these really funky ads of people doing cool stuff either out, you know, on ocean, you know, out on the ocean or in aircraft or, you know, tromping around the bush in army. And they actually show the jobs that you can be doing if you join the forces. We don't have that in our industry. So it is up to us as government and industry and private sector as well in partnership, because we cannot do this alone. And the cyber challenge is a classic example of that. We cannot solve any of this in isolation. Government and private sector are now and must continue to work together to solve this stuff.
And if I can put in a little boon too for the
academic
sector,
yes, sorry, the academic sector.
Also as well very much thinking about how do you design the courses for the future. Within the ANU itself, there's the 3A Institute, which is creating degrees and disciplines, looking at how do you teach people about the sort of technology of the future, and how do you design it? How do you build it? How do you govern it? How do you regulate it? All of these sorts of questions. And that's why I think we really need that diversity of skill and discipline in here, because, yes, there's the actual security issue itself, but there are all of these broader issues at a national level about, you know, who designs the algorithms? What are they based on? What assumptions?
Mm.
We know already that, for instance, there are racial biases in some forms of artificial intelligence, that they're not particularly good at identifying facial recognition that isn't a white male face. They struggle even with white female faces, let alone any other ethnicity or fundamental age variations.
Or stuff that we don't actually even realise is just the underlying fabric of our society. Why are we all yelling at our phones at a woman's voice called Siri?
I'm so with you, Amy. Happy to put it out there. I have sons. And when I hear my two boys turning around going, God, Siri, gosh, she's stupid, automatically not she. Yeah. There is no she in that. Yeah. That's a robot.
Mm.
And they have.
Why did they, all of the voices for all of these automated, essentially assistants, why do they all have female voices?
Because traditionally women are in service.
There you go.
And this is the presumption that women will be in service. Women will come to the rescue with the touchy-feely stuff, the helping out. It's our conditioning. It's our social conditioning.
The women are always there in a support role rather than the leadership
role. Correct. Absolutely. Yeah.
So my two boys have learnt now that they diss the robot.
Diss the robot.
That's going to have to be the headline for this podcast. Dissing the robot.
But it's little things like that we actually don't even realise are a part of the fabric of society. Is a classic respect ad at the moment that's been through the Twitter feed. I don't know if anyone else has seen it, but it's the language we use, and we're not checking ourselves on our language. We're starting to, but we need to check ourselves more on the language. And we have probably quite an excellent segue into the code of conduct that we, last week, a number of us who were at the ASA conference, decided to stand up in Australia. So Jane Franklin, who is an international author and speaker from the UK, was out speaking at the ASA conference and was talking to us about her code of conduct that she helped establish in the UK. So she got CISOs and senior executives and predominantly male champions of change to actually come together and write and agree to and adopt this code of conduct for behaviour in the cybersecurity industry at events predominantly, but also online. So Jane had been subjected to some disgusting Twitter trolling over something that she called out at a conference, and that prompted her to become a speaker. And she talks about being a natural, you know, introversion is her natural style, but this has actually prompted her to take the world stage. She's written a book called Insecurity, and she now speaks about why we need diversity in organisations for that diversity of thought, and why we must stand to make this a much safer environment for all people to be in, and not just a, you know, unwelcoming male-dominated boys' club.
I couldn't think of a better way to wrap up the first podcast of the Women in National Security's special series to go along with the National Security College's Women in National Security Conference. Amy Roberts, Catherine Bridges, thanks very much for being here on the National Security Podcast.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for having us.
Huge thanks to Amy and Catherine for coming into the studio and having that discussion with us. Quite shocking to hear that women only make up 11% of the cybersecurity community, and that number isn't moving up as fast as it should be. That is clearly going to have to be a focus for government and its industry partners moving into the future. And don't forget, this is the introduction to our special week of podcasts that we'll be coming to you in collaboration or in conjunction with the Women in National Security Conference. And my wonderful colleague, Gabby Kniep, will be hosting these pods from here on in. So you'll hear her lovely voice coming to you very soon. And I will be coming to you from the conference with some of the feedback from the speakers and the participants of the conference, and if I'm lucky, I might nudge my way into one of the studio recordings as well. So thanks very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us via Twitter on Apps Policy Forum or Facebook at Asia Pacific Policy Society, or using email podcast@policyforum.net address. Love to hear what you think and some suggestions. Give us a rating, hit that subscribe button, and we'll speak to you tomorrow with the next Women in National Security podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.